six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome back to the Real Bourbon Bros podcast, the essential podcast for the novice yet curious whiskey enthusiast. Giddy up. All right, everybody, welcome back. This is Gary. Welcome to the Real Bourbon Bros podcast, the Real Bourbon Bros podcast. This is Gary, yes. And Steve is with me tonight as well.
Steve,
how are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thanks.
Good. Fantastic. Well, that's better than good. So we have an exciting podcast coming your way tonight. We're very, very lucky to be joined by Logan Welk, the President and Chief Operating Officer of Blue Note. I should say BR Distilling.
Yeah, Blue Note's fine. Nobody knows what BR Distilling is, and it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, we're so happy and lucky to have you tonight to share a few minutes with us and our audience, all things Blue Note, everything they bring to the table currently, and maybe what's headed, where the company's headed in the future. So welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. So we always like to, you know, ask our guests like kind of their origin story of how you got involved. Well, in your case, with Blue Note, You know, where did that, you know, maybe your personal journey of how you got there? A little background.
Yep, I'll do the quick background because sure. I think it's a little bit different than what most people expect of the bourbon industry. But it's I was econ business focused through college and then grad school accounting masters. So I worked at a large regional bank here, then left that, worked for KPMG, which is a super large 100,000 plus employee audit tax advisory firm all around the world. Billed way too many hours, never slept, but got some really great exposure. Left that to actually buy a business. Figured out the importance of legal structures and the things that aren't fun to talk about and how important those actually end up being. It ultimately fell apart in due diligence when we realized what was going on, but then came on as CFO in 2019, back when the brand had sold just a couple hundred cases at the time, and the brand ultimately wasn't even the focus of the company. So I guess this really gets into the early days of the company, but federal licensure goes back to 2014, but back then it was a vodka distillery that tried to do grain-to-glass vodka, which is a very hard business to be in. Really, the economics are against you, and ultimately it just didn't work out. But in 2017, going to 2018, it was acquired by a new group of owners, and ultimately their focus wasn't on vodka, and it wasn't on bourbon at the time in the way that we think about it. It was on the bulk side of it, the barrel side. So we worked with the largest liquor brokers in the world. We worked with Constellation, Diageo. We stored a bunch of products in what was then just a 29,000 square foot warehouse in North Memphis. So as a brand perspective, if there was any Tennessee product that was produced by George Dickel that went out to High West in Park City, Utah, in all likelihood went through our building. Everything that Nelson's produced in Nashville was stored in our facility because Constellation didn't have the storage capacity for it to stay there at the time. So I'm trying to think, they had about 1,600 barrels that lived with us for a while. Barrelcraft, all their barrels were stored with us in Tennessee. If you're familiar with Pursuit Spirits, they got their entire start. We did all the early bottling and blending for them for the first couple of years. So it's kind of cool to see that sort of background side of the business. We ultimately have shipped to around 125 different DSPs across the country, shipped internationally across Southeast Asia, Europe, Mexico, South America. And it is really interesting to see the liquid strategy and the economics in play for that aspect of the business. And then really took that as an opportunity to learn and then ultimately get into more exposure on the branded side of the business. But but it really wasn't until 2021 where Blue Note as the brand really started to expand. Mm-hmm. The SKUs that are in existence today really started to get the legs underneath them. And like from an awards perspective, everything is 22, 23, 24. And I know we'll probably hit on it later. You got to start drinking through it, but mm-hmm. like the awards that we've gotten, I know there's a lot of, conversations around awards. Do they mean anything? Do they not? And the way I always talk about it is 99.9% of the awards mean absolutely nothing. I mean, if you wanted, you could create your own award. A lot of times the products that are submitted to the awards aren't actually the products that are available on the shelf, which is, I think, really sad and really disingenuous to consumers. But it's been really great that like San Francisco is the one that we really call out just mm-hmm. because it is right. one of the actual blind tasting panels that you can submit to. And like Juke Joint and Crossroads, now double gold winners 3 years in a row, triggering that platinum, which there's only, I think, six SKUs that have achieved that in recent history of every single brand that submits for it. And I think what's important about the platinum designation is it's looking at you achieve the same level of extremely high performance year after year after year. So it's not like you had one batch that was good. It was over and over, and having that consistency of product and especially the products at those price points, really when you look at pandemic forward, the way prices went for so many of these brands, it was kind of crazy. And it's not always like you saying that our product tastes the exact same as Weller 12, which has the same score. It doesn't taste the same, but it's, you can trust, okay, there's a level of quality that when you're spending your $30, $35, $45, $50, like you're not going to be angry that you just spent this money. And I think that's really where people need to look at the awards from that perspective.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's certainly been interesting to see how the companies change, the landscape of bourbon has changed so dramatically in a really short period of time. And now in the last 12, 18 months, it's changed even more dramatically again.
Yeah. No, I agree with all that. Yeah. It's almost, I don't know if it's plateauing is the right word, but.
Evolving. Yeah. It's evolved. And I think the pandemic forced a lot of things to market that ultimately wouldn't have made it in any other normal situation. And distributors historically used to be that mechanism that prevented products from going to market that didn't really have the ability to like live in a super competitive market. But for various reasons, the distributor landscape has really allowed every product to make it to market one way or another. And it's great from a availability from the consumer standpoint, but it also creates the complexity of, well, now your distributor is responsible for selling 1,000 different SKUs of bourbon or rye or whatever it is. And there's no realistic ability for a distributor to be in that position and promote, grow a brand.
Yeah. It's difficult.
But I mean, I think it's interesting because the pandemic, obviously you had the price point shift, a lot of stuff went super premium, super elevated, and you've seen a very sharp pushback against that really since the middle of last year. And there's brands that were acquired. There are brands that thought they were going to get acquired at those price points. And when you look at the data behind them now, it really wasn't data that you should have relied on. And what I mean by that is so many brands focused on selling their product into new markets and just launching. You're across all 50 states in the U.S. You're shipping internationally. Great. Did those states order again after you shipped it to them the first time? And what so many realized was the answer was no, but they weren't focused on it, so they kept on thinking the answer was yes. And that's where you get into, like, Total Wine just went through the largest destocking I think they've probably ever done, or if not ever done, they've done in a long time. And just how many brands were caught up in that. And it's not exclusive to bourbon. It was literally every single category they cover was just massive destocking. because you had these people just loading up on inventory, thinking that these consumption rates were going to continue forever.
Yeah, but that's even, sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, even that's more true. Than that, like you had distributors lending against their inventory in their warehouse, which creates this weird dynamic of you're converting inventory in your warehouse to cash. So it sort of disincentivizes your need to actually move it off your floor as quickly as you used to.
Hmm.
And it's kind of a weird turn mechanism that people didn't start to pay as much attention to inventory levels as they used to. And this is where like the public companies in particular really either have been hurt or will be hurt because as there's starting to be more focus on this, there's less ability to load up a year's worth of inventory at your distributor. Where they used to do that in the past, it's now we're starting to bring those inventory levels back down to normal.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the prices will back to our normal too. That's the I think for consumers, you know, are
exactly
and demand. Hopefully that's simple economics too.
Yeah. And I mean, for us too, like our input costs are declining. We had purchased so much stuff really at the early days of the pandemic that we didn't have to deal with any of those crazy price spikes that a lot of people were hit by. But I mean, the excess glass inventory that's out there now, and you just go down the list, there's people that are selling it far below original manufacturing costs just because they're sitting on millions of bottles of stuff out there and no one's looking to buy it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see how all those waterfalls just hit the industry at different points in time.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So I have a couple interesting, well, not maybe not interesting facts, but maybe they are for our audience regarding Blue Note. So if I'm reading this correctly and did a little research, the oldest distillery license in the city of Memphis, is that correct for Blue Note?
Yep, that's correct.
Very good. And then, so Memphis, obviously, I've never been to Memphis. It's on the list. It's on the list.
Yep.
But the climate there, okay? So how does that affect, you know, when you're aging?
Yeah, the Rick House.
Yep.
Yeah, how does that affect, do you think, Blue Note specifically? Yeah, is that
A special edge?
Yeah, so it's really interesting, and to get the science behind it, you have to look at like historical weather data. And,
right.
Okay, what are you seeing there? But then you're actually looking at what you experience in the storage facilities itself, and then also what you experience going there on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So just like the numbers, Memphis versus leaving it in Kentucky, we get 2 months more of active aging per year. Like that's massive, especially when you compound years of this. Higher humidity, we're evaporating less. Higher humidity means you're also building more pressure in the barrel. So more pressure for longer each year, more oak interaction. You're driving a very different product.
Right.
And what's nice about our location in Memphis is we're far enough north of downtown that we don't really have that heat island effect. So we get cool, clean air breezes overnight and into the morning. And that's great because you get that good air circulation throughout the day, which is super important. But it is also good because like all those different factors there is even a microclimate from Memphis itself. And before I started to actually look at the numbers, it was really driven by the fact that I used to go to work, really, really early in the morning, like 3-4 o'clock in the morning on a pretty regular basis. And like I would notice every single morning, the temperature would drop dramatically right as I was about to get to work. And it's right a mile and a half out is when the temperature changes so dramatically. And then it's the fog coming off the river. And then if it was snow, there would be so much more snow right there than anywhere else. And I was just looking at how those different factors all really played into influencing the aging environment of the barrels themselves. And then for the products that we're actually proofing, so like the Juke Joint, the Crossroads, the Rye, we're tapping into what is the purest water in the United States, if not on planet Earth. And that's not marketing, that's just the fact. You can look up all these water tests that are out there. Memphis is number one repeatedly. So you take the combination of all those factors and you're really just tying in the best of all the elements and pulling it all together.
So, yeah, it sounds like you don't have to do any complicated heat cycling in your rick houses.
No,
at all.
No.
That's actually quite cool. And you have the natural.
Yep. Yeah. No, and it's really interesting too, because it's plus or minus, but approximately 45 degrees and below, the bourbon's effectively going to sleep. So maintaining that for longer without having to do steam heating or something like that. Yeah. First of all, it's a cost savings for us.
Yeah.
But it's always, I think, fascinating to people. Make sure I don't get this wrong. Was it 72, 82? I think it's 82 degrees. I might be getting this wrong now. But it's the flash point of 120 proof alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely low. I think it's 72.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 72. Yeah. So everything above that is where you go to a highly volatile substance, but that's where airflow is super important, especially in the original building that we're in, which is a combination of you've got storage on one side, bottling on another, offices on other. So it's not a electric-free environment. It's just maintaining all that super good airflow through the building is really important. We won't have that combined issue. So we're reactivating another 80,000 square foot building on our street, which used to be Pepsi's old bottling plant. And that'll be dedicated exclusively for barrel storage. That'll be full in the next now year and a half. That'll have about 30,000 barrels in it.
Nice.
And then we'll expand from there pretty quickly.
Very nice.
A lot of barrels.
a lot of barrels.
Well, it's interesting because I think the average, the novice whiskey fan, you know, may not know all that technical, you know, data, you know, that goes into, in fact, that, you know, goes into making a good whiskey, making a good product. They're like, oh, I like how this tastes. Great. You know, but to actually, you know, explain it the way you do and get that knowledge out there, I think it's very beneficial. You know,
I mean, if they do taste something like Crossroads, whatever.
Crossroads is my go-to.
I would have to say it is very different.
Yes.
Than your Kentucky whiskeys, bourbons, Tennessee whiskeys.
Yep.
It took me a few tastes just to kind of get my notes together, because I was like, this is like Gary and I think are both cask strength bourbon drinkers.
Yep.
So to have something like this come across, and we're like, hey, this, you know, we'll try this, and it's almost like it's a subtlety that I just can't quite put my tongue on yet, you know. But I got,
you need to drink more, Steve.
150 milliliters to figure that out. So
yeah, no, I mean that toasted French oak finish really throws people's palate sometimes.
Yeah, you know, like adds a layer.
Some people get like dessert profiles coming off of it. Sometimes I get that, sometimes I don't. But it is really just interesting how it changes. And then Crossroads is one that I'll throw an ice cube in, even though it's only at 100 proof, just because you unlock some of that additional complexity.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, no, I'm with you. It's for the most part a lot of cast strength stuff, which for us is very accessible. It's pretty easy to go get that. We've done some experimental stuff, though, with some rum finished in our rye casks, and we just dumped another one of those at 136 proof.
Nice.
And surprisingly smooth, but 136 proof is still 136 proof.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're doing more like special allocated kind of barrels that you're making like a one-time, you know, offering for, or?
Yeah, so we have a fair amount of R&D that will never make it to market. And I think that's what's been beneficial for us, is that we haven't been forced to put things to market to sell it if it's not good. Mm. Not everybody has that luxury. Like, honestly, we have some barrels that are just bad, and we have thousands of dollars tied up in bad barrels, but it's, you get the bad ones, and then ultimately you also get the good ones along the way to figure out what's working. And what's interesting is there's no tried and true step repeat process. Different cooperage, different types of finishes, all that stuff is going to behave a little bit differently. And it can be bad, good, bad, get good again, or it can be bad and never get good ever again. And you kind of have to go through that cycle to figure it out. But ultimately, if it works, we scale it up. and roll it into different products. The majority of that stuff really hasn't made it to market other than just one of the releases we had, which was a special reserve release last year. It was by far our highest price point item at $225 a bottle. But it was also sort of our first foray into blending multiple different types of finishes together. And that's where it was fun to see Whiskey Advocate rated it in their top 50 bourbons they've ever scored ever. And that's the first time that we're actually like going into that sort of realm.
Very cool. Yeah. And just for our audience, to kind of take a step back, if you don't mind, the main products, obviously, Blue Note's known for, are probably the most common ones you can find out there. The flagship, brand is the Juke Joint.
The Juke Joints are 93 proof, sort of everyday sipper, good go-to. Does really well on-premise for the people who want to throw it in a cocktail. It can stand up in that as well.
Yeah, mash bill 70% corn, 21% rye, 9% malted barley, 93 proof. Crossroads, we just kind of touched on there again. That's the unique thing there is with the finish of the Crossroads. Yep. It's toasted French oak, toasted 100 French proof. Oak. Yeah. And the one bottle that I kind of wanted to get to, because I actually have this bottle. it's a store pick, the Uncut.
Yes.
So, yeah, this Uncut one here. Yep. So this proof is 120.9.
Okay.
So that has a really nice kick, and I love this bottle, by the way. mash bill for Uncut is 70% corn, 21% rye, 9% malted barley. Again, the proofs vary, unfiltered, uncut, and this was a store pick again.
Which store was that?
Actually, maybe it's not a store pick. Let me double check. No, it is a store pick. I was right the first time. So this George Awad, he's Sunshine Liquors. I'm in Tampa area. Yeah, okay. So I think he's his store's in Palm Harbor and St. PDS stores. So yeah, I got this maybe last year, beginning of last year.
Okay.
Yeah, so I really love this bottle. So the Uncut stuff, well, obviously, like Steve mentioned earlier, we are both fans of the high proof. So this is right up my alley. The one I have not had is the rye whiskey.
Yep. Yeah, 95%. Yeah,
I haven't seen that one yet, but 95%.
Yeah, that one really isn't that available in Florida yet for some reason. Okay. Looking to change that one, but that rye is interesting because even though it's a 95.5, we found that it is far more approachable than what most people associate with rye. Mm-hmm. And I've probably said this 1,000 times, but it's still fascinating to me how many events we go to that people are bourbon drinkers and they will refuse to taste rye because they don't like rye and they've never had rye in their entire life. But it is over and over and over. You hear that.
Yeah, we've been there, I think, ourselves at some point in our early journey.
Yep. And
then what they don't realize is if they've had cocktails, most likely it's had a rye in it and they don't even know it. So it's always fun to see that.
I've got the Blue Note, of course, the Crossroads version. And I just saw a Facebook post just the other day of one of the Michigan local bourbon clubs here. And he finished it, Dead Soldier. And he says, oh, I wish this was delivered, available in Michigan.
Shucks.
I'm like, I think I might have the only other bottle in Michigan.
that might be changing.
I'm hoping. I think you have some fans up here if that's the case.
Now we're looking to make a little bit of expansion, but really focus across Northeast. Michigan gets a little bit west, but close enough for us. Northeast, Southeast, and then Texas. And then with that, we're hitting on a lot of major markets, but it allows us to really concentrate our sales force, which continues to grow. We've added a lot of salespeople this year, added a new head of sales and a lot of people underneath him as well. And it's allowing our marketing dollars to get a lot further than they would if we were trying to talk to the whole U.S. But it's difficult because in a market where everybody wants you to be everywhere, consistently saying no, not now, is sort of a weird position. But it's one that's worked out well for us, especially just seeing how much the distributor landscape is in turmoil, really in that post Sazerac RNDC breakup and everything that's fallen out of that. I mean, it's, if you think that everything is calm and quiet, it is anything but.
And speaking of, you know, the company and how it's doing and what's on the horizon, may you know, getting to that point, I just read this headline yesterday: Blue Note launches limited release Honey Rye cask. I've been reading the you know, the press release on this, and this is definitely a bottle I need to try, I think. So can you tell us a little bit more about this limited release?
So it's actually the one that's in my glass, because once again, I get a lot of people. But no, I mean, I think what sets this apart is it's not trying to force it. So it's allowing the bourbon or the rye to rest in these honey casks for as long as it needs to be. It's not saying we've got a set release date. It's when it's ready, it's ready. But we filled these with honey summer of last year. And it was fun initially, but then it turned into not so much fun when all the bees found it. And honey is interesting because even though you think it's going to seal the barrel really well, it actually does the opposite. It tries to dry the barrel out a lot. So you get tons of leakage coming out of the barrels. Well, the wasps found it first, then the bumblebees, then the honeybees. And it was, it's literally thousands upon thousands of them swarmed. So we had to take it outside of the building, and it sat outside. So it was getting cooked in the remainder of the summer heat up until it was the first frost, and it was cool enough in the morning that the bees were not on it, and we were able to pull it inside, get the honey out, fill it again with the rye and the bourbon, and then allow it to continue to age. But yeah, it's a, it's an interesting process of allowing it to go through the cool cycles, the hot cycles, all of that, and then trying to make sure it all doesn't leak out at the same time. But yeah, I think what's also sort of a standout is it's not just this, but so many of our products, like this, this honey release is only going to be a $64 bottle. And like, that's my dog.
He doesn't like the price.
He does like the price.
But I mean, like, when you see where some of these prices have landed, it, it is kind of crazy.
No worries. We could take it. No worries. That's, that honey looks good.
What am I gonna get this is my dog. Found her at a bourbon event. In East Tennessee, a little over a year and a half ago. She'd been abandoned in the mountains. So she was 6 months old, 6 pounds, pine cone stuck in her, worms, fleas, everything you can imagine. So she now lives a very spoiled life. And she does work with me most days.
And sampling bourbon too, maybe.
She's good because she'll usually sleep through calls, but not always.
No worries. We have room for somebody.
Running in her sleep.
Mascot on the podcast.
Exactly.
So the just to circle back around on the limited release honey rye cask. This is available now, and this is at 117.2 proof, 95% rye, 5% malted barley. Yeah, I gotta find me a bottle of this. Just from reading the notes here, I obviously haven't tried it, but the notes on the nose: apricot, vanilla, allspice, oak. Palate, caramel, apricot, oak, floral finish, allspice, and with the finish, soft and balanced, lingering hints of wildflower, and of course, honey. I love those honey barrel projects, so that's definitely up my eye.
And it's nice on this one because we do have a bourbon one as well, but the rye, it really balances out some of that sweetness. And it's also, I'd say, lighter on the honey side. Some of them I've had are very punch you in the face honey. This makes it a little bit more drinkable. But I'm really happy with the way it turned out.
I think the ladies might like it better too.
Well, at 117 proof, I don't know.
Hey, we're out of Tennessee.
Put an ice cube in there, they'll love it. There you go.
Very cool.
So what's next on the horizon for Blue Note? Anything in the pipelines that our audience would be interested in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's there should be more availability of our products. Mm-hmm. So we're expanding online retail pretty substantially. That's in the process of rolling out. Some further expansion really across the Northeast is where you're going to see the benefit of that. We're making a good number of changes that should expand our accessibility through mm-hmm. traditional retail, and then also have a lot more visibility on premise as well. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be some additional, I would say, vertical or horizontal extensions of current SKUs that are out there. Mm-hmm. As we continue to get more age on the product, there'll be some higher age statements that'll ultimately come out as well. But once again, it's not trying to force the stuff to market if it's not ready. It's let it get there on its own.
No, that's great. And I think the best news, you know, some of the, you know, from my perspective, you know, for the, especially the novice whiskey drinker, the whiskey drinker that's just getting started, you know, it's the price point, right? You can, all these are affordable, $30 to $50 approximately. So you can give it a try. And it's great. They're great bottles, not only for having neat or maybe with a cube or even mixing. So I think there's some versatility there that lends to maybe just the novice whiskey drinker. So I think that's important to note as well.
Yep. And I think that that's a really important part, because even though we might drink cask strength on a pretty regular basis, that's still not the majority of the market.
Right.
Like, the majority of the market is still getting into stuff where 93 proof might be high proof for them.
Yeah.
It is. So it's just having products that sort of are available at all those different price points and different proof points as well. And it is always interesting to just to see how people's palates change over time, or they'll come back to a bottle and, oh, I really like this one again. That's what makes it fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had this bottle like 3 years ago and I hated it. Now it's great. Yeah, it's like, what happened?
Exactly.
Like, I was to drink too much whiskey. My palates changed that much.
Yep. Burned your palate.
Exactly. Well, that all sounds great. Steve, do you have, I have a couple quick hitters.
Well, I mean, of course I'm more curious about the Crossroads, and I really want to try that uncut as well. And the rye. And,
I can bring you a sample of that up.
Oh, that's cool. Because, that's, like the Blue Note, the Crossroads, Logan, what's the average year of six, four?
So those are a combination of 3 to 4 year olds.
Uncuts. Okay.
Yeah. Uncuts are 4 to 5. Pretty much everything's going to transition 4+. Honestly, a lot of what's in the bottles is 4+ now. It's just that some of the label runs we did were so large when there was some 3-year-old juice that we're still using up some of those. That's also that like safety factor for whatever reason you had to throw a drop a 3-year-old or whatever in it.
Right.
But yeah, it's. I think that's what's interesting is, normally a 3-year-old product would be very rough, and that's where even just getting that additional aging in that different environment, it really is surprising when people taste this like head-to-head against other products, same age range, how different it ultimately comes through. And it's not just the aging, but I mean, it's the way we blend, the way we proof, the way we bottle, all has different ways that it changes the product. And there's some of it's, I would say, secretive, but others is just like we've learned along the way what works, and it may not be what other people do because it may not be the fastest, but it works for us.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Great. I was just curious about that. I couldn't, couldn't find that. Hitters.
Quick hitters. Yes. Very good. So these are kind of, maybe not, still on topic, but fun questions, you know. I don't need a 5-minute drawn out answer. Well, unless you want to give us one. But okay, your first whiskey that you tried that you can remember legal age.
So first is definitely I used to drink Gentleman Jack.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think a lot of people would say Jack or Gentleman Jack. I think that's.
Yeah, it was. Definitely through college, Gentleman Jack, a lot of Gentleman Jack.
Oh, of course.
Did you have it straight or did you mix it?
So what's bad is used to play beer pong with Gentleman Jack instead of beer.
Wow. Oh, that's strong. That's strong game there.
So Beer used to make me, at least this is what I thought, beer used to make me drunk, but Jack didn't.
A little bit quicker?
So I was actually very good at it. I was far more focused. But yeah, that's what you tell yourself at the time.
Yeah, it didn't have as much weed in it, right?
Beer just sneaks up on you and you just get sick.
Yeah.
With whiskey, I can drink, it seems like, the same APV for the night and not get sick.
Yep.
And now, Gentleman Jack, I just, side note, they got a good spokesperson, Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis?
She was for Turkey, wasn't she?
I think she was for Gentleman Jack. I thought she had some the commercials, TV commercials.
Well, maybe she's listening. She can let us know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I just saw her and I'm like, oh, Gentleman Jack.
She's one of the rare celebrity spokespersons that works in bourbon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Yep. Oh, next quick hitter, and this may have a little longer explanation. I read somewhere that you guys, Blue Note, are the official, what is it, the official sponsor of...
Official bourbon of Major League Pickleball.
Pickleball, thank you. Yes. Yep, yes. I couldn't get the words out of my mouth.
Yep.
That's interesting. How did that come about?
So a combination of factors. Ultimately, our head of marketing had previously worked with the head of Major League Pickleball. And there were some conversations about, did we want to get involved, sponsorships, things like that. And initially it was, maybe, but is this going to be one of the other like 50 different organizations that reached out wanting to do a sponsorship deal that doesn't necessarily make sense? And didn't really think much of it. I was actually down in Tampa at an event, and people just completely unprovoked start talking about pickleball. Like, okay, interesting. Come back to Memphis literally the next morning. I've got breakfast with a board member and the people at the table talking about pickleball. It's like, okay, well, I've got completely different age ranges, completely different parts of the country where we're in those markets, and they're all talking about pickleball for various reasons. So it was sort of go back, look at this marketing proposal. They worked, and it was really interesting to see how the early nature of Major League Pickleball, their flexibility to work with us and really grow with us as they grow, really presented a really unique opportunity to tap into really a key demographic that is they talk about the Benjamin Button effect, where it's aging backwards. So it's like getting more and more into our key target audience. Every price point availability that we could ever think of is hitting right along those lines. And even though you've got the super professional side of it, you've got the people that are doing it for fun, and there's a lot of people that have turned it into a drinking sport. It is kind of cool to just see how many things have aligned. And we're excited about this multi-year partnership and growing with them. And
that's awesome. Yeah, it's huge in Tampa. It's huge in Florida in general. Yeah, it's with the weather.
It's everything. It's every tennis court's being turned into a pickleball court. New developments are building pickleball courts just to drive residents there. It's really interesting to see.
Yeah, I have a few friends that play tennis down here, and they do not like the pickleball players. Yeah. Over the court. It's like, what? So,
exactly. And it's funny. So Lifetime Sports, they're a gym. But they're super into pickleball, and they're actually developing a pickleball ball that's quiet, because one of the big issues is it's so much noisier than tennis, the actual ball. So they're trying to find a solution to that, and I think they found one. So hopefully that works.
Yeah.
Well, interesting.
Very cool. Well, that was kind of a one-off of our hitters here, our fast hitters. But I had to circle back around to that because I forgot about asking it earlier. If you had to choose between the major types of whiskey, rye, scotch, Irish whiskey, which would be your favorite that you would go with?
So
whiskey, bourbon.
Yeah, I think it would be bourbon is bourbon. What I go to. Yes. Just because I've got so much of it. And like seeing, I literally look and I've got a bar closet full over here, and it's just
nice
seeing the different profiles you can get from it. And like I've had scotch in the past, I used to drink more of it, and it's just not really up my alley from time to time. It's fine. But no, I really think there's something really impressive about bourbon. And when you look at the push of like additive free, all of that's like, well, that's what bourbon is. It's always, well, it's not always, but it should have always been additive free.
Exactly.
And it's just like gluten free, all that stuff. You check the box on all of it. Yeah. So
it's good for you.
Yes. Yes. Just don't put that on a bottle. Someone will get very angry quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They would be in trouble. Yeah. I think we both agree with you. Yeah, our favorite's bourbon, too. We like the high proof bourbons ourselves. What was my next question? Steve, do you have a.
Well, I've got that advice question if you want to.
Oh, no. I had one more. Oh, so, I know. The advice question, you can ask it next, but I have one more if you don't mind.
Okay, go ahead.
Besides, obviously, and this is kind of a loaded question, but we always have to ask it just in case, you know, there's an advice. Besides your own brand, is there a specific brand out there or a choice current of brand, bourbon that you, maybe current something release that's, you know, that you're really into right now?
So the series that I can always go to and really I'm never disappointed by, it's the Old Forester 1900 series, like the 1920s. They're just good.
Yeah. We agree.
And you get that different profile with Brown-Forman, but it's just easy to drink. Yeah. And like I like Woodford Double Oak. That's a great product. Yep. But I mean, as far as like big brands, I think those are great big brands that you can find pretty much everywhere.
They're accessible and price points not too bad either. Yeah, we agree with you. Yeah, definitely. All right, Steve.
All right, so we kind of been trying to inspire our audience, and we try to market to the novice yet curious whiskey
enthusiast.
Right. So, and we're a bunch of, I guess, two brothers that are taking this path along and discovering whiskey, kind of together. You know, we started, I don't know how many 15 years ago. I mean, it's been a while, but you know, this is kind of the origin of our podcast. And so we always like to ask, you know, people in the business like yourself, like what advice would you give to those people just starting out, trying to, you know, discover their way along, you know, their own bourbon trail, so to speak.
So I would say there's the business side of it, what I'm doing, and then there's the drinking side of it.
Yes.
from the drinking side, I would say it's be open to like trying new stuff. It's you don't necessarily have to jump right in just because your friends are drinking cask strength. Like you might get there, but it doesn't mean you have to start there. It's perfectly fine to start with some of the big brands that are out there, but it's also fine to drop and find something new. And I think that's kind of the key to finding your way of what you like or what you don't like, because every single person's palate is unique and it's going to be different at different points throughout the day. So it's just because you've had it, and we talked about this before, it's you might have had it once, it might taste completely different when you taste it again. So don't throw something out just because it's not what you're looking for at the time. From the business side of it, I would say this is a far more complex business than what most people think it is.
Yeah.
It is extremely competitive, extremely capital intensive. And sometimes that side of it is glossed over and they think like everybody's there to support you. You can start this up in your garage and you're going to become the next Bullet.
Damn it.
You're not.
Avoid all those, you know.
Yeah, it's.
Start your distillery tomorrow.
No, I mean, and that's what I think has been the frustrating part as my girlfriend takes my dog away from me. Is you see, unfortunately, so many people that put their entire life savings into their next stage of life of retirement, we're going to open a distillery and we're going to expand. And it's, you lose sight of how many costs there are. And it's not the things you think about of, oh, it tastes great. It's the everything beyond that. It's, is your facility compliant? Is all the legal stuff there?
Red tape,
is your banking relationship good? Do you have the money? Do you have all this other stuff? How do you salespeople, marketing? It's all of that
stuff.
It's interesting. You know, there is a lot more distilleries. The more I stay in this hobby, or you know, the more distilleries we discover.
Yeah,
and we only probably scratched the surface. I mean, of course, we know the bigger ones and so forth, and we're getting to know a lot more other ones. But there's a lot of them in Michigan that I'm discovering. Like, I didn't know. I mean, I can count on one hand the major distilleries in Michigan.
Yeah.
But there's another like dozen that are just popping up.
Oh yeah,
you know, and it's like, okay, let me try it. And so I think you've got something there. And you know, I've seen these ads where it says, you know, start your distillery tomorrow. You know, and it's a course. You know, it's a marketing thing. And it's like, hey, you know, we'll show you the ropes. But you know, people maybe don't realize how much effort it takes. And
Well, and something too about we'll show you the ropes, and people think, oh, cool, great. There's going to be somebody that walks me through this. What I always point out to was Bulleit Bourbon, owned by Diageo, the largest spirit conglomerate on the planet, setting up their new facility. It didn't work. Like,
if you have all that,
you can literally draw on every expert, and the facility still is not producing the way you want it to. Just think about the headaches that you're going to run into yourself just trying to do this without unlimited capital and resources behind you. And sometimes you are lucky and you don't have the issues, but it is a weird situation to live through.
We had the pipe dream. Yeah, one day we could do, you know, we were obviously joking about it, starting something, but I think we're a little more grounded than that. We'll stay with our day jobs and leave this as a hobby. But
I'll just go somewhere in my garage.
Sounds like
you're just drink it.
Yeah. Steve, sounds like your wife's doing the grass. Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, I got mute my mic here.
Well, I think we've kept Logan long enough tonight. We appreciate your time, Logan. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap it up tonight?
No, I mean, I think that's it. The thing I always usually part with is, even though it looks like we're a big company, we're actually really small. It's still plus or minus 20 people. Aside from our sales force, no one at the company had any industry experience getting into this. That's finance, operations, everything. So it's really remarkable to see what the team as a whole has achieved in a really short period of time, in really unprecedented landscapes of change. So it's always, I don't know, it's always good to reflect back on how far we've come in such a short period of time.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think I saw my first bottle maybe beginning of last year, maybe 2022, somewhere in there. And every time I go into the store, a couple of your bottles are there, you know, whether it be Crossroads or Juke Joint, I always see them. So in Florida, you're all over the place. So that's good. And we appreciate, again, your time and your knowledge, sharing that with us and our audience. And you're welcome to come back anytime. Anything new comes out, we're always looking for new finishes, new blends, everything. Yep. So again, Logan Welk, thank you again for your time tonight, and we'll talk to you again some other time maybe.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And there you have it, our exclusive interview with Logan Welk, COO of Blue Note. Hopefully you enjoyed the chat as much as we did. Please follow us on our social media platforms and also check out our Amazon store. When you get a chance, plenty to pick from up there, especially with football season around the corner. We got some hoodies, sweatshirts to keep you guys warm at those games. Until next time, giddy up and enjoy.